Thank you, Volker. I wish I had done a Google search on the word commons about 5 years ago. I feel certain that it probably wouldn't have returned more than a few hundred web links at most. Just today when I did such a search, it came up with 6.3 million links. And for me, this is a crude bit of evidence of a quietly unfolding cultural and political transformation. The free software and open source movements are perhaps the most active, mature, and self-aware advocates for the commons, at least in the online spheres. But in truth, there's a teeming constellation of constituencies that are embracing the idea of the commons to advance their agendas. We see environmentalists, librarians, scientists, scholars, computer programmers, media reformers, and many others. And I believe that we're on the cusp of a commons movement, a messy, uncoordinated, bottom-up assertion of what amounts to a new political philosophy, cultural outlook, and new modes of creating value, creating wealth. This development, I believe, is both very new and very ancient. Its newness can be seen in the variety of commons that we see represented in this conference today, in the past few days, from free and open source software, open archives, Wikipedia, peer-to-peer file sharing, open science initiatives, open access scholarly publishing, social networking software, it goes on and on. These are the digital commons. Yet, as novel as these developments are, the commons is not really very new. It's as old as the human species, because the human species has always been rooted in communities of social trust and reciprocity, and this is being increasingly confirmed by empirical evidence of evolutionary anthropologists, geneticists, and neurologists. The real aberration in human history is the vision of humanity set forth by neoclassical economics, of Homo economicus, which defines human beings exclusively as rational, ahistorical individuals who invariably pursue their material utility, their maximum utility, through market exchange. And not only that, asserts that all of society should be organized based on this principle. This is the fragile fiction that free software and other commons advocates are challenging and confront. So what is this embryonic commons movement? It's an eclectic set of campaigns to protect the creations of nature and society that we share in common and that are indispensable to our well-being and to future generations. The commons represents a proto-political philosophy that challenges the totalizing dynamics of the market. The values and behaviors that are rejected by many, if not most, mainstream economists as marginal or inconsequential are embraced by the commons as powerful and important in their own right, not just as moral and social aspirations, but as political functional tools. And therefore, the commons embraces the things we've been talking about today: openness, freedom, social cooperation, community ethics, equity. Politicians and economists have long assumed that there are only really two sectors for governing things and creating value. There's the market, and there's the state. Markets are seen as the vehicle for economic progress, while government is supposed to take care of everything else. But it's becoming increasingly clear that there's another sector that's at least important to creating value and to our well-being as humans. And that sector, of course, is the commons. It's a generic term, as Charlotte described, for describing multiple forms of socially managed resources. But in this sense, it's much the way the market is used to describe a diverse set of resources, from commodity futures options to lemonade stands. There's all sorts of things that the market describes, and so it is with the commons. One reason I think that it's a useful term is because it helps us name a fairly ubiquitous pathology of our times, which is the enclosure of the commons. Governments throughout the world are conspiring with or acquiescing in the market's plunder of our common wealth. Companies are increasingly taking valuable resources from the commons and privatizing them for themselves. The list is familiar to us all: the spectrum, the atmosphere, natural resources of all types, public lands, creative works, and on and on. Once the cash value has been harvested from these common resources, corporations tend to dump their waste and social disruptions, more formally known as market externalities, back into the commons, whereupon they declare it's your problem. So this process, which can be called enclosure, comes from British history, of course, when the landed gentry decided that they could make some handsome profits by seizing and privatizing large tracts of shared meadows, orchards, forests, and other lands that were traditionally used by the common people. And with enclosure, resources that historically had been managed socially, both through formal and informal rules, were privatized and turned into commodities to be sold in the marketplace. In the research for my book, Silent Theft, I came across a wonderful folk poem that colorfully described the basic dynamics. It goes, "They hang the man and flog the woman who steal the goose from off the common, but let the greater villain loose who steals the common from the goose." And this is, in a nutshell, the problem we're facing today. Too many commons are being converted into private property to sell in markets. And not only does this result in people having to pay for resources that they previously got for free, it also means that people frequently need to ask permission to use something, and as I say, pay for them, as Larry Lessig has shown so well in his recent book. Enclosure, it's a useful term because it helps us name the fact that ownership and control shift from ownership and control of a resource shift from a given community or the public at large to private companies. And this in turn changes the management and character of the resource, because as we all know, a market has very different standards of accountability, transparency, and the goals than a commons. Most of us are familiar with the varieties of digital commons that we've been discussing the past few days, but in fact, there are dozens of others, each that are now asserting themselves as if by spontaneous combustion. And let me just name some of these prominent defenders of commons. Librarians are trying to protect free access to and circulation of knowledge. Scientists are trying to preserve their foundational traditions of openness, collaboration, and free inquiry. Creative artists in music, film, and other fields are increasingly realizing that to create culturally compelling works, you need to use prior works. So they need access to the public domain in a commons. Media reformers are trying to reclaim the public airwaves for public benefit, whether through open spectrum commons or through auctions. Indigenous peoples who are trying to retain some measure of their cultural sovereignty by preventing big pharma and other commercial predators from appropriating their traditional knowledge or art. Online user communities who wish to protect their ability to communicate with each other without the impediments of market transaction or other commercial intrusions. And I've not even mentioned the many commons constituencies that are concerned about the natural environment or social justice. These include, of course, environmentalists who see the commons as a way to fight the corporate transformation of natural resources into mere commodities, despite the fact that they may be unique, local, scarce, or merely beautiful. Activists fighting genetically modified organisms see the commons as a way to fight to preserve biodiversity and to slow the privatization of agricultural seeds. Anti-globalization advocates invoke the commons to try to defend democratic self-determination and local culture in the face of global capital. And finally, there's a growing movement of opponents of the over-commercialization of culture, who invoke the commons as a way to combat the intrusions of marketing in schools, public institutions, sports, and virtually every nook and cranny of daily life. A question that I keep returning to after reviewing that kind of a spectrum of people who are interested in the commons is, why is the commons so evocative and powerful for so many diverse groups of people? And then, correspondingly, why is it so invisible to mainstream political culture? I've come to believe that the commons is so powerful and evocative because it allows people to express their personal connections to resources above and beyond that which the market allows. It allows people to express their desire for social mutuality and human respect in a time when the market often is eroding those in the name of property. The commons gives people a shared vocabulary for talking about this and for critiquing the limits of neoliberal political ideology. The commons, therefore, can open up a new kind of political dialogue that is not only political and polemical in the best sense, but humanistic and ecumenical. And so I don't see the commons so much as a manifesto or an ideology than as a flexible template for talking about diverse phenomena that are thematically related, much as you might say members of a family are related to each other, yet very different. This struggle to assert the commons as a social reality is fundamentally, I believe, a cultural challenge. It's about developing a new narrative that can explain our interests apart from market culture, as well as, and here's the complicated part, how our interests as commoners integrates with the market as well, because this is not anti-market in its essence, but more about finding a more fruitful reconciliation with market forces. Unfortunately, the dominant market cosmology sees only a void until property, contracts, and money waves its hands and say, let there be stuff. And the commons insist that social communities and their values come first and is foundational, and indeed is the source of a great deal of value creation in its own right, without necessarily having the ministrations of the market to assist. And I think it's important to stress that the commons is not simply a shiny buzzword or a fashionable term. It has a long and respected scholarly tradition, as Charlotte Hess has just explained. And within the digital world, there are a growing number of very insightful interpreters, from Professor Lessig and Eben Moglen to Yochai Benkler and Professor James Boyle. But what really interests me about the commons is how it's, as a meta-language, it has great practical strategic value in political and policy struggles, because it can play a reordering role much as the environment did in the 1960s, a topic that Professor Boyle has pointed out. He said that the environment, we have to recall, was actually a cultural invention. Of course, the air, the water, the soil, the wildlife, they were all there all the time, but we never conceptualized them in the integrated way that the environment did. And once people like Rachel Carson and others began to popularize the idea of the environment, we began to see some connections. People could begin to see that diverse phenomena that seemed to be unconnected were not really so unconnected, that dying birds were related to household chemicals, and that genetic mutations in human beings were related to industrial chemicals. So the language of the environment gave us an overarching narrative that quite literally helped create and galvanize a political movement. It provided a new story. And I think today we're in much the same situation, in need of a new language to help explain how so many expansions of property law and corporate control are eroding our common resources. We don't have this developed language or narrative for asserting, for example, the value of free, unmetered exchanges of information and creativity. These are seen as either worthless or tantamount to piracy. So I think that the commons is very useful in this struggle, because it helps explain how social communities have their own distinctive role in creating value that is at once economic, social, and personal, and even creative. So market exchange is not the only source of value added. The commons is at least as productive. Just think what nature does for us. Think of what the open source and free software community has done with Linux. The problem is our market-based narratives don't acknowledge these facts. Copyright law generally regards the public domain as a wasteland of next to worthless goods, just as real estate developers regard open spaces or wilderness as unproductive land. So to talk about the commons is to insist that there are other coherent, powerful sources of value creation. And from the vantage point of the commons, one can therefore critique more confidently the limitations of intellectual property law and of market orthodoxy. Instead of having to treat fair use, the first sale doctrine, and the public domain within the grand palace of copyright law and try to pretend that these musty old broom closets are equal to this grand palace, the commons, I think, can help us put forward a coherent and compelling analysis with its own sovereign terms and explanatory powers. And while, of course, we're going to still have to grapple and talk in terms of copyright law and other intellectual property categories in legislatures and courts, I think the commons can help us inaugurate a new kind of discussion with its own frame of reference, one that privileges our terms, or at least puts it on a stronger, more advantageous footing. An equal fact is the commons can help confer some new meanings, new cultural meanings, on the kinds of creative collaborations within social communities. Just as the market confers its grand cosmological significance on very mundane acts of buying and selling. Now, it's a fair question whether this proto-movement can become more integrated, consolidated, and robust. While much work remains to be done, I'm actually quite optimistic because the spontaneous and widespread embrace of the idea of the commons, however rudimentary in its development, suggests a deep human yearning to explore new modes of social connection and collaboration and to assert a common human identity at a time when markets and nation states are only too eager to separate us. So, as a political movement, I think the commons has many attractive features. The commons underscores the fact that the people are actually the people who own and should control certain resources. It brings into focus a wide variety of phenomena that are otherwise vague and diffuse. It's a positive vision, not just a reactive critique. And it helps people seize the moral high ground in fighting market excesses. But I think there's a lot of hard work to do. The free and open source movement, I think, has a very special role to play here because its commons are so ubiquitous, well-developed, and self-aware, not to mention functional. As Evan pointed out, they work. And that message needs to be more broadly heard. And both the literal reality as well as the cultural metaphor of online commons and free software need to be more broadly disseminated to the mainstream public and not just to those within hailing distance of the tech community. So this suggests to me we need to have more dialogue among commons or potential commons constituencies. I suppose one of the biggest divides is because between those people who work in commons that are depletable, for example, natural resources, and those that are non-depletable, such as information and creativity. That's perhaps a great continental conceptual divide between those communities. But nonetheless, I think we need to open up new channels of communication and dialogue between these different commons constituencies. It's one thing I hope personally to do I've just recently started a new weblog called onthecommons.org, which I hope to soon morph into a larger portal for commons resources. We also need to develop some more synapses and connections between academics who are studying this in a very deep scholarly way and the members of online communities and activists who are working in a more practitioner mode, because we need to develop some more rigorous intellectual theories and critiques of this on-the-ground work. Public education and popularization of the commons perspective. This is an imperative goal as well. One thing that some colleagues and I have recently done is, we, just as the corporations have their own annual report to take stock of the stewardship of their resources, we've created the first annual report on the state of the commons, trying to take stock of how our resources are being used. Unfortunately, the management is miserable, rents aren't being collected, and theft is rampant. So a final challenge we have is to develop some new legal and institutional innovations that are as bold as the GPL, in which the principle is that let the surplus value of the commons be retained within the commons so that it can be sustainable. A final point is, I think that any commons movement is going to have to exhibit a tolerant ecumenical humanism, because in a place in which the worlds of art and spiritual tradition will have important things to say. Because the commons is not simply a polemic or an intellectual set of issues, but it's really a matter of social reconstruction, which will require a kind of communication and reconciliation that often doesn't occur through politics. This, at least, is what I envision for a commons movement. But a lot will depend upon how badly people really want to reclaim our commonwealth and fight for it. So I will end with a final stanza from that folk poem that I read earlier, which goes, "They hang the man and flog the woman who steals the goose from off the common, and geese will still a common lack till we go out and steal it back." And so that is what I see as our major challenge in trying to advance a commons movement. Thank you.